Hey, Curious City intern Linnea Dominic here. It's week 3 of the scavenger hunt. Hopefully you're learning a lot about Chicago's community areas and trying new foods. To whet your appetite for learning more about the many community areas here, we're featuring neighborhood-specific episodes during the scavenger hunt. A side dish, if you will. This week, we're going back to an episode from 2016. The Eisenhower Expressway cuts a swath through the neighborhoods west of downtown Chicago. Many communities were deeply impacted by its construction in the late 1950s and early 1960s. Who lived there before? And what were those neighborhoods like? Reporter Robert Lorzel has the story.
If you drive in the Chicago area, you've probably been stuck in traffic on the Eisenhower Expressway. Jillian Zarlenga sure has. She lives in Oak Park, and she used to sit in traffic jams back when she commuted to a job as a chaplain at Elmhurst Hospital.
I had a lot of time sitting on the Eisenhower, examining this huge area of land, thinking there must have been a lot of people that lived here before, and I was just curious where they all went.
To answer Jillian's question, I'll take you through neighborhoods and suburbs that were transformed or even torn apart by the Eisenhower back when it was constructed between 1949 and 1961. We'll go from east to west along the Ike, which runs almost due west, from the Loop out to Oak Park and beyond. As we dig in, here are things to keep in mind. First, the scale was massive. Within the city, 13,000 people and more than 400 businesses were forced to move. Interestingly, Chicago's west side was not predominantly African American like it is today. In 1950, neighborhoods along the highway's path were 19% black, compared with 70% now. Most of the displaced Chicagoans were white, or less often Hispanic. And another thing to keep in mind, back in the 40s, City Hall knew the Eisenhower would uproot thousands of people and hundreds of businesses. But officials still thought it was worth it. Why? Traffic.
Will you stop honking, Mac? We ain't going nowhere.
This is a movie produced by General Motors. The Eisenhower Project made a cameo.
Chicago is moving a city to build an 8-mile-long expressway from the city limits to Michigan Avenue, wide as a city block, into the heart of the Loop, an 8-lane miracle which will send traffic through the middle of the main post office building like a special delivery letter.
Back then, the Ike was called the Congress Street Expressway because it followed the path of an old street called Congress. Traffic was especially bad on the west side, so that's where the highway builders started work. But first, they had to destroy lots of buildings. Property owners did sue for better compensation, but there was no mass uprising against the demolition.
Initially, there was very little protest at all because traffic was such a large problem. People understood that they needed roads.
That's researcher David Spatz. He's writing a book on the history of Chicago's expressways. He says city officials weren't just concerned about traffic.
Expressways were seen as a way to kind of kill two birds with one stone, to modernize the city by retrofitting it for cars and for traffic, and at the same time clear out neighborhoods that were blighted.
Here's one theme from my reporting. Many of the people who actually lived in these neighborhoods didn't think they were blighted. Take Jim O'Neill, who lived on the Near West Side in the 1940s, the first neighborhood to be demolished.
I don't think our building was run down. And you know, I've seen pictures of the neighborhood. It certainly does not look run down to me.
O'Neill's family lived on Van Buren near Ashland, with streetcar tracks in front of their apartment building.
But we used to put pennies on the tracks and then hide behind the cars or hide inside the front door of the building. And then the streetcar would go by and flatten out the pennies.
O'Neill says it was a working-class area with a mix of ethnic groups.
Mexican-American. I believe that there were some Puerto Ricans, but there were some Irish people that I had gone to school with. My sister had some African-American friends that she used to hang around with. There were some neat girls.
But then they started building the expressway. O'Neill, who now lives in Florida, was 8 years old when the wrecking balls hit in 1949.
It was like we were the last building standing. They started in the east and came west. Little by little, our block came down. I have these vivid memories of these piles of rubble the workmen would pile up the wood, and there would be these piles of beams that would be burning. And my sister and I would be making these great bonfires.
O'Neill's family moved to the south side, and he lost touch with everyone he'd known in the old neighborhood. Now, Jillian asked us what happened to the people displaced by the expressway. No one really kept track of where they all ended up, but we can see patterns. Some people just scattered. Others followed their ethnic groups to different enclaves around the city and suburbs. For example, Mexican Americans on the Near West Side ended up in Pilsen and Little Village. In other parts of the Near West Side, the demolition forced Italian and Greek Americans to move. Harry Lalagos and his sister Demetra live in DuPage County now, but their family was in Greektown until 1959.
Everybody knew everybody, and everybody had cousins and relatives that all lived in the same area, so I mean it was a very tight-knit community. My dad had a store down there, a grocery store and a restaurant.
Everybody was so close. Our doors were always open. People were just popping in and out.
Harry recalls the expressway being built.
I do remember the construction equipment digging down and putting in the overpasses. I mean, if you were standing like on the Halsted Street overpass and looking west, you would see the overpasses at Morgan Street and Racine, but it was just, you know, just all dirt.
The expressway wasn't the only project that tore up Greektown and Little Italy. A decade later, even more people, including the Lalagos family, were forced out when the University of Illinois built a campus there. Greektown's surviving businesses shifted north of where they had been. Historians say many of the neighborhood's Italians moved to suburbs like Melrose Park, Elmwood Park, and Addison. In the 1950s, as the demolition and construction continued west, it sliced through a Jewish part of West Garfield Park.
That was the Jewish west side. There were Italians who lived there as well. That was really the heart of Jewish Chicago. It was a nice community. There were, you know, a lot of restaurants and shops that, you know, where people knew each other.
That's David Satter. When he was a kid in the 1950s, he lived on Congress Street near Pulaski. His family's building was not torn down, but everything on the other side of the street was. Construction was slow and created zones of dead, hollowed-out buildings.
I do remember people saying that this was destroying the neighborhood. It was tearing the heart out of the neighborhood, and that it demoralized people to have it built there that way. It destroyed the whole atmosphere.
In 1959, when Satter was 9 years old, his family moved to the south side. A lot of their neighbors went north to other Jewish areas. Satter thinks the expressway was one reason, but certainly not the only reason, why so many white people moved out of the West Side.
The Eisenhower Expressway, it made people feel that, you know, it was the end of an era. You know, the community would never be the same, and it didn't make sense to fight to stay there.
The city's portion of the expressway was complete in 1956, but Cook County and the state extended the road through the suburbs. Unlike Chicago neighborhoods, the village of Oak Park fought for changes to the highway plans. Oak Park got exit and entrance ramps on the left side, in the middle of the superhighway, instead of the usual spot on the right. That saved land around the exits. In total, Oak Park lost about 100 buildings. According to Frank Lipo of Oak Park's Historical Society, many displaced families simply bought or rented new places elsewhere in the village. Still, the Eisenhower did cause Oak Park some serious headaches. Marguerite Studney lived next to the construction zone.
It was 5 years of hell, to put it very bluntly. And they had a permit to work 24 hours a day. That meant that often during the night, a pile driver was in action. And when the pile driver was pounding, the bed would vibrate. And often in the morning, you'd find you'd have to push your bed back 3 feet to the wall where it was to begin with. And that went on for 5 years.
Studney died in 2010. She gave this interview in 2004. That was 50 years after the expressway was built, and she still sounded upset about it.
Well, yes, I think it has been a big dividing factor in Oak Park. I think it's acted like a barrier. and it has split the town up.
In nearby Forest Park, 3,500 graves were moved at the Forest Home and Concordia cemeteries to make way for the expressway. But as the construction continued farther west, it didn't displace that many living people, not compared with Chicago anyway. Here's historian David Spatz.
Well, I think it's important to note generally that the city was much more densely packed at that time, and also the suburbs were much less settled at that point.
The original Congress Street Expressway was finished in 1961, reaching Elmhurst. 3 years later, it was renamed after former President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Spatz says Chicago learned a lesson from the Ike.
Because it took so long and it was so difficult. I mean, you're seeing no tangible results from all of this destruction. The traffic is still terrible. A lot of people were displaced. And so there was a good bit of bitterness about the inability to actually carry out these projects quickly.
The city built more expressways, the Kennedy, the Dan Ryan, the Stevenson. By the 1960s, when Chicago considered building a north-south crosstown expressway, there was major opposition to the demolition and displacement. Protests were a big reason City Hall killed the crosstown. After all, the Eisenhower and the other superhighways didn't exactly create the utopia General Motors had envisioned in the 1950s.
This is the American dream of freedom on wheels, an automotive age traveling on time-saving superhighways.
I bring our questioner Jillian to the studio, along with her baby daughter, to talk with historian David Spatz. And they end up reflecting on the ironies.
It was congested the day it opened.
Wasn't the idea of the Eisenhower or the Congress was to help people get to the city, and instead it ended up with people fleeing the city?
Yeah.
Learn more about the construction of the Eisenhower and see pictures and movie footage at wbez.org/curious city.
Hey, Linnea again. Quick update. Jillian's daughter, who you heard gurgling, is now 5 years old. Curious City is supported by the Conant Family Foundation. I'm Linnea Dominic.
Curious City editor Alexandra Solomon here. It's August, which means summer is winding down and the school year is fast approaching. For Chicago public schools and many suburban schools, an all-remote learning experience this fall means a totally different routine for parents, kids, and school staff. A huge change from the way school normally starts out, and not one we're used to. We've already started to hear from families who are worried about how this new routine will affect kids, and the Curious City team wants to know more. For parents or guardians, what worries have you been hearing from your kids as they anticipate the new year? And if any teachers are listening, what concerns have you been hearing from your students, their families, or your colleagues? Leave us a voicemail at 888-789-7752. That's 888-789-7752. And your story might get featured in an upcoming episode of the show.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Sometimes you just need a quick overview of the news.
Meantime, it was chaos today at the Chicago City Council.
A Chicago cop with a controversial past is running for judge.
Other times, you're looking for a deeper understanding of what's going on in the city.
Wow, that's so... No one has asked me that question.
The Rundown podcast has all of that, and it's Chicago-based, so you know what's up in your neighborhood and across town. Listen to The Rundown wherever you get your podcasts or at wbez.org/rundown.